Today's Tesha will be on case 44 in the Book of Serenity, Jingyang's Garuda. Introduction. A lion strikes an elephant. A Garuda strikes a dragon. Flying and running, they still distinguish ruler and subject. A patch-robed monk should remember guest and host. How can someone who brazenly affronts the authority of heaven be judged? Case. A monk asked Master Jingyang of Ho. A dragon king comes out of the sky. A dragon king comes out of the sea. Sky and earth are tranquil. How is direct presentation? The master said, Garuda, king of the birds, takes command of the universe. Who can stick his head out here? A monk said, suppose one suddenly appears, what then? Jingyang said, it's like a falcon catching a pigeon. If you don't realize, check in front of the tower. Then for the first time, you'll know the real. The master said, if so, then I'll fold my hands on my chest and retreat 3 paces. Jingyang said, you blind turtle under the seat of Mount Sumeru, don't wait for another scarring from a rap on the head. Verse, the imperial decree comes down, the commanding orders distinct. Within the heartland, the emperor, outside the borders, the general. Without awaiting the thunder to rouse the insects, how could one know the wind stops from coursing clouds? A continuous weave under the loom. Naturally, there's a gold needle and a jade thread. Before the seal is wide open emptiness. Originally, there's no writing. So thank you all very much for coming to practice today. And sitting so beautifully this morning. Everybody, we had quite a large number of people who came here early for all the whole morning of activities and sitting very deeply. Thank you so much for making such an excellent effort. I don't know if you saw last night on television, or I had a chance to see on the internet a video recording of the conflict yesterday between the president and our vice president and Mr. Zelensky. You know, I have had really mixed feelings about the war in the Ukraine because so many people have died. It's just been terrible. And I have been so troubled by that. I wish there had been some way to not go into this war, you know, because it's just been so destructive. And it seemed to be going on forever, so I myself was hoping that it could get wrapped up in some way and people's lives could be saved. I saw last night on the news, or video of the news, this conflict, open conflict between Mr. Zelensky and our president and our vice president. And of course, this is on top of so much going on, with people being laid off, it almost seems like indiscriminately. You know, I actually have a number of people in my family who are in the State Department My stepmother's family, they're a big state, they're mostly all in the State Department. And I've had a chance to talk to them, and they're absolutely horrified by what's happening. I would admit that, the federal government is very large, and I'm sure that there's a lot of inefficiency. But, my stepmother was telling me that, USAID does all this good. They really are a wonderful organization. They, provide medical care and food. They're constantly intervening. So all of this has been distressing, right? It's just like actually like months and months and months of events that seem to remind me that I have no control over the situation, or no control over my situation and our situation. We have some good friends who live like two blocks over, and I won't say their names, but they're really nice people. Both of them are in the health professions. They're not doctors. One is a lab researcher, and the other is an IT person, and they've both worked for hospital system for like, 35, 36 years, and they've just retired. And the instability is, they're literally like so frightened that something might happen to Social Security. Yesterday, I had a chance to go into New York, which I actually always enjoy. And some of you know, I write for this magazine occasionally called Tricycle Magazine. And I went in to have lunch with the editor and all the editors there. It was a really lovely experience. They are, I would say, very nice people. It was such a pleasure to meet them. I think the executive editor, James, is about my age, but all the other editors are really young. A couple of them just got out of college, and they're very well educated. A number of them have like PhDs in religious studies and things like that. And their office is on Fifth Avenue near Union Square. So it was really wonderful to walk over there from Penn Station, and we had a wonderful lunch and talked about, what their work in the magazine and Buddhism. Really nice people. And then when it was coming time to leave, the editor, James is his name, said, "Well, how are you getting back to Penn Station?" And I said, "Well, it's like a mile and a half or something from the park to Union Square to I'll walk, And he said, "Well, I'll walk with you." And as we were walking, he was saying that his partner is Brazilian. And he said, "My partner says maybe it's time for us to go to Rio in Brazil," So, he was actually contemplating maybe we should leave the United States, because things are so distressing right now. So, all of these, no matter where you come down on all these issues, there's a lot of instability. And, the effect is to make us feel powerless and frightened, right? And when we feel frightened, we withdraw into ourselves. Our instinct is to protect ourselves. I think little by little, that has a really destructive effect, not just on like a society, but on us as individuals. I think little by little, we become more and more withdrawn, you know. I think I talked last time about the fact that about a month ago, after Sashi and I lifted some, boxes out of my car, you know, full of cooking and stuff, and I was taking it down to the basement, as I have for like 30 years or something. And I thought I pulled a muscle, but I just got an MRI and I've like ruptured a disc in my back. And you know, the first couple of weeks were so painful. And you know, I haven't really been in that much pain actually for in my life actually. And you know, especially when I tried to sit, it was very painful. And you know, over those couple of weeks, we're sort of at the maximum discomfort. You know, it's interesting to see how pain affected me. You know, I was like observing how this pain would affect my mind. And it's definitely the case that, you know, when you're in pain, you really start closing off everything. It's like your world gets narrower and narrower, you know, so it's just you and your pain. And I have seen that before. My brother eventually died of cancer, but he had like this very, he had like bone cancer, very difficult. I had no idea, really, you know. And I saw him go from this very, you know, funny, alert, nature-loving guy. It's just like his focus was so narrow. It's like nobody was really in the room with him, you know, towards the end. Nobody was, you really weren't, he was like by himself with his pain. And, you know, as some of these political events have been going on, I've just been struck by how similar a lot of this is. You know, our reactions are, we sort of contract and contract. And, you know, if you have a physical ill, you know, this event that happened to me, I've been really lucky in my life. I actually have never had this happen before, and I'm in my 70s now. You know, when it happens, it's not just the pain. It's like you think, oh my God, will I ever be able to sit again? Or will I ever be able to backpack again? That's what I actually asked my doctor. Will I be able to backpack again, you know? The sense of powerlessness is very, very profound. You know, I found it to be really there, you know, helplessness. And I feel that this is sort of the way things are in the larger world right now, you know. We're experiencing our helplessness. I've been sitting, you know, trying to work out a way to sit every day, right? And the first couple of weeks were really challenging. I mean, I sometimes I would just lie down on the floor like I did a couple Saturdays ago here. Sometimes if you are working with pain, you know, it feels like it's absolutely like a tidal wave and there's no way to stop it. But, you know, if you're in a lot of pain, it has been my experience that you can find this place that's very still and unmoving. It's like it's hard to find when the pain is really powerful, and if it's too powerful, you know, you should definitely lie down and stop. But it's interesting that if you even if you're in a lot of pain, if you just keep watching your breath and you keep going into mushin, into emptiness, you can find this place that's very, very still. It's almost like you're in agony, and then suddenly you find this place where you're so relaxed you could go to sleep. And then it's gone again, and you're sort of like looking for it, you know? And, you know, this has sort of been my practice for the last month. You know, I've been trying to find that. I've been finding that place, and then it goes away, and then I find that place, and then it goes away. And, but, you know, sometimes you can find that place, and it's like you're suddenly in an island of peace and stillness. You know, it's like the eye of a tornado, you know, or eye of a hurricane. You know, a storm, a hurricane is like a vortex. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever had the experience. When I was a little boy, on the military base where a hurricane hit while we were all in the pool, and it was like these incredible winds, and it was, trees were falling, and we all went into the bathhouse at the pool, and then it stopped. And we went outside, the sun was shining, and it, you know, all the tables had been blown into the pool with the umbrellas and everything. But then we realized that this was just this eye of the storm. It was coming back. You know, we had to go back in, and it all started up again. It was such an interesting experience. But, you know, sitting with this injury has been really interesting because, you know, it's definitely the case that there are moments when you just feel like, I can't do this, or this is overwhelming, and you should just stop and have a rest. But, you know, if you sort of work with the pain, sometimes it's pain is such a bully, but then you get to this place where it's absolutely still. And, you know, if you stay in that stillness, it's like all of this energy and even like joy comes up, you know, joy. And it's amazing, really, you know. I mean, I think we all have found that sometimes on the cushion, you know. After meditating a couple of days at Sesshin, your legs hurt so much, right? And it can be, you know, I can remember early in my Zen training, you know, just thinking, oh, this is terrible. Every day it was just like, you know, breathing like a locomotive trying to get through the pain. But then I can remember discovering this this place. It's still, you know, there's that wonderful line by T.S. Eliot, the still point in the turning world. You know, there's this still point in the turning world. And I remember the first time I encountered that was we had a sesshin. We held a sesshin. Before we had a place of our own, we used to rent places to have sesshin. And we were in Eastern Oregon, if you know, Eastern Washington, which is desert, not like Seattle. And we had this sesshin out in the desert. And I remember one night, suddenly, it was like my pain just disappeared. And I felt like this tremendous energy, right? this tremendous, you know, like I was invulnerable. And I went to see Genki Roshi, and I said, Genki Roshi, you know, my pain has just disappeared. I feel I'll never have pain again. And I remember him laughing, really, because the next morning I got up and I was in pain again. But that experience of, it's like you're down there struggling, and suddenly there's like this, there's this higher power. There's like this power, right, that you encounter. And it's really, it's like everything goes away, and suddenly you feel so connected and alive. And of course, you know, pain undermines our trust, of course, right? I mean, it's not what we want to have happen, and it's such a bully, and we feel so helpless. But then, you know, there's like this moment where it's just like you it's like you step into this absolutely still place, and it's like lifts you up and, you know, illuminates your mind. And, you know, we learn this lesson, I think, in Zen, you know, again and again, right? It's like to practice meditation sometimes is so frustrating, and you feel so powerless. You know, if you're working on a koan, you know, you can spend it, you know, as the sesshins add up, right? As the sesshins add up, you know, you come to session number one and you're working on a koan and you think, I'll answer it. And then, you know, you don't make a breakthrough in that koan, so then you go to the next session and you still don't make a breakthrough. And then the next, you know, after a while, your identity is on the line. You've put so much into this and you think, will I ever answer this koan? You know, it's an experience of powerlessness, right? And then, you know, maybe you just give up, and all of a sudden, you know, there it is. You know, you suddenly have this deep insight. And, you know, one of the things about Zen is that it does involve a fair amount of physical discomfort, right? I mean, there's something very crude about sitting with a lot of pain in your legs. And you know, and around day, if you haven't done sesshin, please do. You'll never regret it. You know, spoiler alert, around day three of sesshin, your legs may really hurt, and you may be at a place sometimes where you think, you know, I want to get in the car and drive away. But if you don't drive away, you know, there's this tremendous, you sooner or later, around day three or day four, there's this, it's like a light switch goes on in your head, and there's just like this tremendous openness and energy. So you know, this is we all have a dragon and we all have a Garuda. You could put it like this if you want to, you know. I mean, I have been somebody who likes to jog, run, since I was like in college, since I was like 18 years old. And, you know, I built up a pretty good stamina. I can still occasionally, I don't run as much as I used to, but I used to do like 7 miles a couple times a week at least, you know. And I always took a lot of pride in my self-discipline and my, you know, physical fitness. That's sort of like, I would say that's kind of like the dragon, right? That's the dragon. And it's good to have a dragon in your life, right? You know, so, you know, to be disciplined, to take care of yourself, you know, challenge yourself, all of that's great. But the Garuda is like a little different, because the Garuda comes to us when we are, you know, when the dragon has sort of like failed us, like when you can't, when all your training, all your effort, all of those things haven't worked out for you, right? You know, it's just that doesn't seem to be working. Then it's like you have to call on like the something like higher power, so to speak. You know. You know, in Buddhism, in Chinese Buddhism, there are really two major schools. There's Zen, and there is this other school called Pure Land Buddhism. And both of them actually come out of India, believe it or not. Pure Land, many people think Pure Land Buddhism is a devotional Buddhism that was invented in China, but it's not. It is devotional Buddhism, but it actually comes out of India. The Lotus Sutra is a really big Pure Land Sutra. And there's a number of other Pure Land Sutras that come out of India. So it went from India to China, and it became a big deal in China. And Chinese practitioners, you know, recite, they may say the Buddha's name, it's called Nyenfo. And, you know, whereas we're doing Zazen, they're sort of like praying or reciting lines from a sutra over and over again, right? It's just like prayer. Zen, especially in the United States, Western people think, oh, well, you know, Zen is the real Buddhism, but, Pure Land Buddhism is like this second-rate Buddhism, you know, for people who can't do Zazen. And, you know, I have to say, I kind of thought that way myself. But, you know, and you'll hear people say, when they talk about Zen, sometimes in Japan, they'll say, Zen is based upon self-power, and Pure Land Buddhism is based upon other power. So there's this contrast in Japanese Buddhism between self-power, like you sit on the cushion and you tough it out and you do it. And then there's this other power, which is where you ask heaven for help, right? And, you know, the idea is that the Zen is the superior path because, you know, you do it yourself, right? You don't have to ask for help. But I think that's a terribly mistaken view, you know, terribly mistaken view. You know, I greatly appreciate Pure Land Buddhism. In fact, you know, our lineage is a Rinzai lineage, but it really has many pure... our particular lineage goes back to China, and it has many Pure Land... it used to have many Pure Land aspects to it. You know, in the afternoon, we still recite that sutra about when the time comes for us to die, you know, we want to know in 7 days before our bodies drop, and then we're going to go to the Pure Land. That's what we say. We're going to go to the Pure Land if we haven't achieved Daikensho here, and in the Pure Land we'll be able to achieve Daikensho and finally wake up. That's what we, it's a little complicated, but that's what we're really promising, see. And, you know, it's possible to think, oh, this is really not Zen, you know. But I don't accept this separation between other power and self-power. I think that's a very false view. You know, I think that when we really, really practice Zen, you know, I think beginners... They take a lot of pride in their dragon power, you know. So I have, when I was younger, I had a chance to sit with a number of different communities, right, in the Northwest and in California. And I definitely noticed that some communities were very competitive. You know, people in some of these communities were very competitive with each other. And, in you know, the teacher may have encouraged this in a way, you know. In Soto Zen, and this is not a knock on Soto Zen, people at different levels of achievement wear different colored roksus, right? So you'll see pictures of Zen masters, both American and Japanese, and they'll have their roksu, and the Roshi will have like a yellow roksu, and so on. And, you know, they're sort of like black belt in karate and so on. And some of these communities were very competitive, right? It was like, you know, the people would compete with each other in terms of how, whether they could sit full lotus or half lotus, and how long they could sit, and very competitive. That's like dragon Zen, right? People, you know, they worked hard at it, they practiced, they sat until their teeth chattered, you know, and so on. And that's the dragon spirit, right? And there is a lot of dragon spirit in Zen, right? You know, I understand. It's sort of like warrior spirit, right? And I don't disapprove of that. I think there's an element of Zen that has a kind of warrior character to it, right? You tough it out, you don't get much sleep, you know, that sort of thing. I didn't enjoy those communities very much. I didn't like that spirit. In the Rinzai tradition, we don't have colored roksus. All the roksus are the same, which I think is great, right? It's important to have dragon spirit. So if you're an English professor, you want to keep up on the scholarship. You want to, go to the talks. You want to read what you need to do. You need to write a little bit every day. Keep your edge sharp, But there's this other, there's like the Garuda spirit. The Garuda spirit. I've done all of this stuff, and it's either working out or it's not. But, when it comes to working through your koan or waking up on the cushion, proficiency doesn't do it, You can be the best sitter in the world, really, and that doesn't guarantee that you'll have a breakthrough or see the source face to face. Those kinds of moments happen when we are, when we're in a big or small crisis, when we are disempowered or we feel helpless, actually, it's important not to be helpless, but even when you try and you fail, you reach a point where, you really are helpless. And then, that's often where things happen. That's often where things happen. I remember when I was I had my big breakthrough many years ago when our community, our Zen community in Seattle, was actually failing. We had internal conflict that led to like factionalism and we had a financial crisis, and we had to put our temple up in the mountains up for sale. And so all these things were like falling apart around us. And Webb Roshi asked me if I wanted to come to Sesshin. And I really was ready to quit Zen. I thought, this whole civil war in our community has been so unpleasant, so terrible. But I loved Glenn, and I didn't want to let him down. So I said, yes, I'll go to the Sesshin, and I went. But, when we went to the Sesshin, we knew this is the last time we're going to be in our temple because it's going to be put up for sale. And it later became part of a ski resort, That was a terrible, I didn't know that at the time, but it was like, oh man, we built this 5 years ago. We all got together, we cut the wood, we built the roof, some of these people now weren't even speaking to me. And, I was just going through the motions. I felt so powerless, right? And actually, one of the things that happened was that we had left the door open, and a mountain jay came in, and he tried to get out during Zazen and hit the window, and it injured itself. It couldn't fly, so it took refuge. We tried to catch it, and it hid out under the Zendo. I was so worried about this little bird, and I brought him some food, some bread, and some water. And I came the next day, and somebody had eaten him. I couldn't believe it, right? It was just like, oh no, there were just some feathers. And that was the day I had my Daikensho. Right? So it was like, what else can go wrong, right? you know, it was like I was sort of like at my wit's end in so many ways. And then, you know, there was this opening and this insight. And that's the Garuda. That's the Garuda comes, you know. So, you know, it's good to count on our strength, you know, get some exercise, stay in good shape. You know, stay in good shape, you know, eat well, stay away from, you know, cholesterol, foods that have a lot of cholesterol. You know, this whole thing with my back, you know, I've kept myself in really good shape, but somehow this still happens, right? When, you know, we get to this place where we feel we have no control, that's where we encounter the big self. It's like the failure of the little self, you know, is where we meet the big self. It's just the case again and again. And it's like the dragon power is okay, right? You know, if you're in martial arts, be a dragon. You know, but the Garuda is where enlightenment comes from. The Garuda power. So, you know, we always think, you know, we have, it makes sense, right, to demonstrate, you know. Yesterday I didn't buy anything. We had our day of no shopping, right? I didn't buy anything, right? I didn't buy anything. I planned it out. I went to the store on Wednesday, you know. So that, you know, more, I'm happy to participate in more activities like that. I've already called both my senator and, you know, representatives several times over various issues. You know, very important to do that. You know, there are possibilities, you know, that we have, how to put it, we have resources that are like, you know, if I may say, superhuman resources, right? And we don't normally know how to access those, because you can't access those by, actually, you can't access those by, it's good to sit longer, do more zazen, please. You know, I do a lot of sitting. But, you know, I have had my best sits at those moments, not when I'm really in charge of my body and I'm really sitting, you know, everything's going smoothly and all. You know, I have those breakthroughs when, you know, I'm falling apart or I'm sick, you know, or, you know, whatever, or there's a civil war going on in this community. Those are the moments when we really can step out of all of this and connect to that Garuda energy, right? And, you know, and our Dharma cousins, the Pure Land practitioners, know this too, right? Maybe they know it. They don't put so much attention on dragon energy. They pretty much go straight for the Garuda energy, right? They ask, in Japanese, Amida, right? Amitofo, to come and help them. See? So, you know, that's a very profound teaching. I think it's quite equal to Zen. It's just a different path. So we're in a time now where, you know, the editor of Tricycle Magazine is thinking, maybe I should leave the country, you know. And I know lots of other people who have family overseas and they're thinking maybe we should go. And who knows about the future. But, you know, it's, I think in dark times, you have a chance to, you know, really be illuminated, right? You know, and I also have a lot of confidence that in these dark times, you know, other people will awaken to like the light in themselves, right? Just it takes a dark time to, you know, people just chug along and they think everything is fine, the system is working, and then they wake up one day and realize this is like all falling apart. But if you know how to find that in yourself, you know, you can be a resource for everybody else. This is our, you know, it's like, you could almost put it this way, you know. We've been practicing Zen, many of us, together for 30 years, right? And, you know, and maybe you could say we've been practicing just for these events. Right? We didn't know they were coming, but our practice has been about this, you know. It's like, you know, I started Zen, I had never heard of Donald Trump. I was blissfully unaware of him, you know. And I remember watching his show maybe once on TV 30 years ago or 20 years ago. But maybe all my life I've been training for these events, right? How to respond to these with wisdom and compassion and energy, not being bowled over by your psychological pain, you know? And there's no way, really, that any one person has the strength, and has the strength to deal with this, right? So you have to reach, you have to really go to that place in yourself where you disappear, and then allow yourself to be helped by this energy, right? I think when people think about Zen masters, you know, that phrase Zen master is an English phrase. It's really, there isn't really an equivalent in Mandarin, right? So, when people think about a Zen master, they think about somebody who's always on, always alert, totally together. But, you know, the Zen master is the person who knows how to trust, how to open up and trust and wait for the Garuda to arrive. The master isn't, although it's good to have your act together, it's good to be, you know, practice. I practice every day, you know, just like an athlete. But that's not what makes a master. And a master isn't the one who knows how to sit for long periods or answer koans, actually. You know, if somebody says, I've answered 200 koans, it's like, yeah, well, yeah, great. You know, it's not about koans, actually. It's about how to open up to the Garuda. You know, how when the dragon fails you, are you ready for the Garuda? Are you open to the Garuda? And that's the, you know, that's the essence of practice. I used to work so hard when I was training with Genki Roshi. I was trying to answer those koans, and I just couldn't answer them. And I would sit. And I one time, when I was talking to Genki Roshi informally, I said, "What's the most number of koans you've answered in a sesshin?" But he said, "Oh, I used to answer a koan every day." It was like, "Oh my God, it's taken me a year to answer this koan." And I said, "How do you do it?" And he said, "You know, I don't know." He said, "I just sit working with the koan," and then he said, "I often have like a dream where I'm a little boy again. My teacher was a war orphan." So he was a little boy monk, you know, and he would see himself as a little boy in his monk's clothes. And he said, when I see myself in my monk's clothes, I wake up, and then I know I have the koan, you see. So that's like deep, that's a deep experience, deep, deep in the mind. That's coming out of a very deep place. And the thing that I love about that story is that my teacher trusted that process. He trusted so, Genki Roshi was a true Zen master. And, you know, he could sit till you screamed. He could sit forever, but that wasn't what made him a Zen master. What made him a Zen master was what I just said. He had a relationship with the big mind that was based completely on emptying himself out and trusting the process, see? He had that Garuda energy. See, that's what made him the wonderful, lovable teacher I will never forget. A monk asked Master Xing Yang Ho, "A dragon king comes out of the sky, out of the sea. Sky and earth are tranquil. How is direct presentation?" So he's kind of saying, well, what do you think? That dragon energy is where it's really at. The master said, "Ah, but the Garuda, king of birds, takes command of the universe. Who could stick his head out there?" See, so it's like, yeah, the dragon energy is good, but have you met the Garuda? Have you, you know, when you're at your last, when you're on your last, you know, when you're, all your resources are gone and you don't know what to do next, then the Garuda arrives. The monk said, "Suppose one suddenly appears, what then?" Xing Yang said, "It's like a falcon catching a pigeon. If you don't realize, check in front of the tower, then for the first time you'll know the real." You know, when you're really down and out, you're really, you know, helpless. Then the Garuda shows up and then you know, this is the power of enlightenment. The monk said, "If so, then I'll fold my hands on my chest and retreat three paces. He says, "So, okay, then I'll just take it easy," he says, basically. "Good, I don't have to do anything, I'll wait for the Garuda to show up," right? And Xing Yang says, "You know, you're a blind turtle. You don't get it. You have to try and then you have to let go." See, try. You know, use up your dragon energy, but then it's the Garuda that comes and sets you free. Verse, the imperial decree comes down. The commanding orders are distinct. Within the heartland, the emperor. Outside the borders, the general. Without awaiting the thunder to rouse the insects, how could one know the wind stops the coursing clouds? Without awaiting the thunder to rouse the insects, unless you are waiting for thunder to come, waiting for the thunder. That's what we're all doing on the cushion. Yes? How could one know the wind stops the coursing clouds? The wind that stops the coursing clouds. A continuous weave under the loom. Naturally, there's a gold needle and jade thread. Before the seal is wide open, emptiness. Originally, there's no writing.